This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, August 18, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from vacation up in the Adirondacks. An awful scene in Chicago last night with the Oakland Athletics playing the Chicago White Sox. All-star Chris Bassitt was on the mound. Brian Goodwin at the plate.
Now it checks the runners. Here's the pitch. It's a swing and a shot up the middle. Knock. It hits Bassitt. Wow, it rolls to the right of the mound. Everybody is safe, but the concern is about Chris. Boy, that ball was hit right up to him. I don't know exactly. Maybe in it. Let's hope it's not a blow to his head, Vince. But it looks like it might be.
Yeah, it does not look good.
Well, he is down, and Nick Paparesta, the A's head athletic trainer, is out there, and he went down. He's down on the front slope of the mound, and that was a ball that was just hammered by Goodwin right back to him, and Chris is face down. And now all our thoughts, everybody at the ballpark with the A's right-hander.
That was Kent Korak on A's Cast. Yeah, he was hit in the head. Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, gave an update on Bassitt after he was carted off the field.
Bass is conscious. He was the entire time. We don't think the eye is a problem at this point. It felt like it was below it. He's got some cuts. They had to do some stitches. He's in a scan, and we'll know more about potential fractures or whatever tomorrow or later tonight. We don't know right now.
White Sox manager Tony La Russa also spoke about what happened.
Over the years, I've seen it against us in force, and I'm trying to think there's anything scarier than that. The guy gets hit in the head at the plate, but he's a little bit reactionist, is so defenseless, and so he's the number one concern. I just heard that he's conscious, been getting examined, so certain hope that he caught a break and he's okay.
People all around baseball undoubtedly today wishing for the best for Chris Bassitt as we await news. The playoff races continue to heat up. The Padres trained to hold the lead for a wild card spot in the National League, but they ran into Charlie Blackmon and the Colorado Rockies again.
The pitch, this one is hit high and deep to center field. Back it goes, over and out of here. Blackmon did it. Two-run shot. Rockies push the lead to 6-3. Oh, man. Charlie Blackmon hit the heck out of that ball.
That from 850 KOA. Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a home run, but the Padres lose 7-3. They're being chased by the Cincinnati Reds, who face the Chicago Cubs, a team that went into Tuesday's game with a 12-game losing streak. Well, guess what? That came to an end.
Happ lines one deep right field. It's got a chance. Gone. Line drive, home run to right for Ian Happ. Cubs lead 2-0. You talk about a ball leaving the park in a hurry. That was it.
Kyle Hendricks pitched well. Cubs win 2-1 there. So at the end of the day, the Padres, a game and a half ahead of the Cincinnati Reds in the race for the second National League wild card. In the American League East, bad news for the Toronto Blue Jays. They placed George Springer on the 10-day injured list with a sprained left knee. That, of course, devastating for a team that had been playing so well since Springer came back. The Blue Jays faced the Nationals, a struggling team, and they were not able to take advantage.
Adams launches one to left down the line toward the corner. This has got a chance, and it is gone. Riley Adams is homering against the Toronto Blue Jays, his second homer in a Nats uniform. They lead it 8-1. That one goes about five rows into section 105, right down the left field line.
That from the Nationals radio network. Washington beats Toronto 12-6. The Rays face the Orioles, and it was really ugly again.
3-2 the count. And the pitch, another one, way up into the air. My goodness, headed to the party deck. And gone, home run. He goes ahead of Dave Kingman. 41st all time. Nelson Cruz, and it's 10-0 Rays.
That's from 620 WDAE. The final score would be 10-0. Baltimore losing again. 13 straight losses for the Orioles. That foghorn's got to hurt when you're rooting for a team like the Orioles, Taylor, as you are.
Oh, and I was watching that game last night, and I saw the look in Nelson Cruz's eye, and I was like, oh, he's about to take this one out of here. And he sure enough did, and that Hornet, it hits heavy, man.
Man, well, we'll be talking about the Orioles. We'll be talking about the American League East because there is a change in the standings. Yesterday, the Yankees won the first game of a doubleheader against the Red Sox, and then in game two, this happened.
Drill deep to left center field. There it goes! For Stanton, 2-0 Yanks.
That was Michael Kay on the Yes Network. At the end of the day, the Yankees 68-52, the Red Sox 69-53. The Yankees 1 percentage point over the Red Sox for second place in the American League East. It's remarkable. We'll be talking about that shift in the standings and how quickly the Yankees have been able to overcome a double digit deficit in the National League East. The Braves and the Marlins and Waskar and Noah, 5 1/3 innings, scoreless ball, and Jorge Soler came through in the bottom of the eighth.
Looks like he's going to throw it here. 1-2 pitch. And a line drive, base hit, the Braves lead. A two-strike hit for Soler, plates Abraham Almonte, and you talk about manufacturing a run. Walk, steal, wild pitch, single, and Atlanta scores first.
Yeah, it was 1-0 at that point in the top of the eighth. I had that wrong. And then Austin Riley came to the plate in the top of the ninth.
1-2 pitch. Riley hits one to deep right center field, sprinting back hard to Sanchez at the wall. This one is gone. Austin Riley long gone over the right center field wall, and the Braves do get that extra run. It's 2-0.
And that would be the final score. That call from 680, the Fan. The Mets lost at San Francisco 3-2. They are now under 500 at 59-60. 5 straight losses for New York against the 2 best teams in baseball, the Dodgers and San Francisco. The Mets 4.5 games now behind the Atlanta Braves, who are in first place in the American League East. The Phillies, of course, in second place. The attorney for Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer cross-examined a woman on day two of that restraining order hearing that's going on right now. The attorney asked a woman Tuesday why she left out, quote, dozens of key facts in her petition for a 5-year restraining order against the Dodgers pitcher. I don't know, answered the woman, who testified that Bauer choked her until she was unconscious and punched her repeatedly in 2 sexual encounters. The exchange during lawyer Sean Hawley's cross-examination of the woman came in her second day of testimony at the hearing in Los Angeles Superior Court. Hawley challenged a 27-year-old San Diego woman and why she omitted a text message to Bauer before the meeting, saying she would have, quote, her feelings turned off, and joked that she would have a non-disclosure agreement signed and sealed when she came to see him. An ugly situation there, Taylor.
Absolutely. And awkward transition here, but a couple things for your consideration before we move on to Dave Schoenfield and Hembo. Check out KJZ every morning on ESPN Radio. They are getting after it as the NFL season is nearly underway. We're looking at a couple preseason games coming up this week and this weekend. And Fantasy Focus Football also daily, getting you ready for your fantasy football drafts. I've got 2 coming up, and I've loaded up my phone with a bunch of Fantasy Focus Football episodes to listen to as I'm traveling this weekend. I prefer to listen on the Overcast app, but you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you prefer to listen to your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfeld.
And David Schoenfeld covers baseball for ESPN, which today is, I think, a lot of good wishes, involves a lot of good wishes going the way of Chris Bassitt of the Oakland Athletics. You know, after that game last night, after that ugly scene, Bob Melvin didn't take questions from reporters. And Dave, I got to say, you know, having covered teams when they've gone through this, you know, most notably for me, I'll never forget being at the game where Bryce Flory, someone who I had met when he was in pitching in Class A in the San Diego Padres organization, got hit in the eye, the right eye, while pitching for the Boston Red Sox in a game against the Yankees. He lost a lot of sight in that right eye. It was absolutely devastating. I think he asked the question on the mound he asked at the time he got hit was, you know, is my right eye? And he was worried about whether or not he lost his eye on the mound. It's just so scary when these things happen. You can understand why Bob Melvin was so shaken.
Yeah, no doubt. I remember as a kid watching a game in the Kingdome, and I was in the second deck. Kirby Puckett hit a line drive off a Seattle pitcher named Steve Shields, broke his jaw. Of course, the Kingdome was pretty empty in those days, but it was so loud you could hear the ball hit Steve Shields in the second deck. And with what happened to Chris Bassitt, yeah, it's a reminder, as our colleague Tim Kirkjian always says, that baseball can be a very scary sport. And, you know, these incidents, luckily, they don't happen as often as you think they might when the pitcher's 60 feet, 6 inches from the batter. And let's just hope Chris Bassitt, you know, is okay in the long term.
Years ago, I covered a pitcher named Wally Whitehurst. You remember him? He's with the Mets, and then he got traded to the Padres. And he liked to pitch to the outside corner to right-handed hitters, and he didn't throw especially hard. You know, he had a decent fastball, but what that often meant was line drives coming back through the middle because he was pitching that side of the plate. And I think he was hit like 8-10 times during the course of his career. And I went to do a story on that and spoke to him about it, and he, of course, remembered each incident and what happened. And, you know, he spent a lot of time on the disabled list, as it was called back then, because of those. And one of the times he was hit, as he described it, was Kevin Mitchell at the plate, the big burly slugger, home run hitter, who hit a line drive back through. And Wally said to me that he never saw the baseball, and it wound up hitting him on the very upper right thigh. He never saw the ball before it hit him in that spot. Obviously, a super sensitive spot. He was, you know, besides the bruise, he was okay. And I asked him, you know, like being the dopey reporter that I am, so, you know, what do you remember about that? And he said, look at this. And he held out his arm, and he'd broken out into a cold sweat. He had goosebumps up his arm as we were talking because of the fear that he still felt from that baseball. So, boy, you hope today that we get good news on Chris Bassitt. You know, to hear from Bob Melvin last night that it doesn't look like it involved his eye was good news. Red Sox-Yankees last night. Yesterday, they play a doubleheader. The Yankees, as of today, have passed the Red Sox in the standings. Incredibly, they made up 10.5 games in the standings in just 6 weeks. Here was Aaron Boone last night.
It's a team that has a lot of heart, playing with a lot of confidence, but we got a long way to go. You know, we gotta continue it. We gotta keep the foot down on the gas and continue to grind away, because it's going to be a tough road ahead still. But the group is a confident group, and I think they know what they're capable of.
Yeah, and Dave, I didn't see any questions on social media today whether or not Aaron Boone's going to get fired as manager. things have changed dramatically for the Yankees.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the 10.5, but even on July 26th, they were 9 games behind the Red Sox, who were still in first place at the time. Since then, Yankees have gone 17-5, Red Sox 8-14. I had a chuckle watching the broadcast on the YES Network last night, because after the game, Paul O'Neill and David Cone they were just giddy, you know, laughing that this was a great day for the Yankees and who could have seen this? Well, this is what the Yankees do. Never count out the New York Yankees. And we knew they were playing way below their talent level, you know, the first 3+ months. So it's surprising that they caught them this quickly, but I'm not necessarily surprised they caught them.
It's interesting because right after the trade deadline, when they got Anthony Rizzo, they got Joey Gallo, they got Andrew Heaney, I was talking with a member of the Red Sox organization, and I said to this person, you know what? I just get the feeling they're going to find a way to make the playoffs, that they're finally going to bash in offensively the way that we expected, to make up for a lot of the, you know, the other issues that they have, to build a margin for error for their pitching staff. And that person sort of looked at me, and I want to say forlornly, okay? And the response was, well, if they make it, we're not going to make it. And that may turn out to be right. And I think there was a sense of concern within the Red Sox organization after they came through the trade deadline.
Well, and there were, you know, even heading into the trade deadline, there were some markers that the Red Sox were playing above their heads, you know. So we knew there were some concerns about the rotation. The offense was top heavy with, you know, 3 or 4 hitters. The bullpen had been so good that you kind of predicted a little regression. So, and all those issues have come into play. And, you know, Kyle Schwarber's back, but he's playing DH, which means they got to play JD Martinez in the outfield, which means they're still not getting offense at first base from Bobby Dalbec. They just signed Travis Shaw, who'd been waived. So they still have these problems that they did not fix at the deadline.
All right, do you feel enough confidence in watching this play out to predict whether or not the Red Sox are going to make the postseason at this point?
I mean, I know it's we're reacting in the moment, and they don't look good. The Yankees look great. So, yeah, right now, you know, I see the A's, the Yankees, and the Blue Jays, who, you know, a little further back, all better than the Red Sox right now. So, you know, yeah. I don't think they're going to make it.
Although the injury to George Springer, that boy, tough blow for the Blue Jays. Yes.
Yeah, you know, obviously a huge blow. They've been rolling, you know, since he had come back. Oakland, you know, with Bassett, he's been, you know, he kind of pitched his way into sort of the back end of the Cy Young discussion. So if he's out, that obviously hurts Oakland, and he can't make trades now. So, yeah, the Yankees, you know, of those four clubs, you know, they would be my odds-on favorite to win the wild card, and I'm not going to dismiss them chasing down Tampa Bay. Now, as long as the Rays keep playing the Orioles, they look good, but their starting pitching has been scuffling a little bit lately.
So you mentioned the Orioles, and I feel like before we shift out of the American League East discussion, we need to talk about this because this losing streak just continues to build. Their season run differential continues to build. They're now, if you to project based on the current pace, they're going to win something in the range of 53 games. But who's to say that when they're going to win again? Give me some thoughts on the Orioles. And Taylor, I'm going to bring you in on this as well, because you are an Orioles fan.
Taylor, I want to hear you first.
Well, I mean, it's definitely been a bummer. I tuned in last night to watch John Means, and he's continued to struggle since coming back from the IL. I was getting ready for the pod last night. And two fun nuggets here. Over this losing streak, the Orioles have only led in the seventh inning or later in one of the games. And they have a 9.4 team ERA over those last 13 games.
So, oh, my God.
It's been a little bit of a disaster. I'm kind of rooting for the losing streak now. Like, let's make it historic. Let's go all in on this. I mean, it can't get much lower than this. And I mean, and this isn't the first time this has happened this season. I have a whole file with bad Orioles stats, and a lot of them are derived from the previous horrific losing streak they went through earlier in the season. So it's fun. I love the infighting among fans too. That's been great to watch as well.
And among Orioles fans,
yes,
the infighting
yes.
is among Orioles fans because they're very different perspectives. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's lots of people, and I don't blame anyone on either side. Like, lots of people, you know, pro Mike Elias, pro this, you know, whole, you know, the process of tanking and all that. I mean, what else are you really going to do? But then I also completely identify with the people that are like, what the F are we doing? Like, what is management doing? Just not feeling a competitive team. I mean, it's complete insanity. And, you know, Buster, you're still not invited to the victory parade as of this moment. That's okay.
I know a couple of tweets where you're just noting the statistics and the absolute debacle that's going on, and people are unhappy. Dave, what do you got on the Orioles?
Yeah, it's just a disgrace. And, you know, this is really a problem, not just with the Orioles. The Cubs have been a complete disaster, you know, since the deadline. They finally broke their 12-game losing streak last night. But these bad teams are so bad. It's bad for the sport when you have so many non-competitive games the last 2 months of the year. You know, I think the long-term issue here, you got to fix the draft. Whatever rule you put into place, you know, you can't pick in the top five 2 years in a row. Maybe it's a five-year rolling record, as one executive suggested to Jesse Rogers last week, you know, to determine draft order. Because you can't just say, if you're bad, you get a high pick, because that, you know, pushes teams into this tanking direction, and it's bad for the sport.
Well, and for people, just to reiterate what I said last week, for people who are saying the Orioles are not tanking, they're rebuilding, then I say, well, if they're not tanking, then what you're telling me is that they are doing a historically bad job of putting together a roster. It's one or the other, right? Either they're tanking and they're designing failure, or they're putting together a horrific roster. And either way, I think there's a discussion to be had about whether or not this is the best way to run a baseball franchise.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know the Astros, they had those three terrible years, right? You know, but even then, okay, on the big league roster, I'm not counting the farm system, on the major league roster, at least you still had Jose Altuve and you had Dallas Keuchel. Now, the Orioles, maybe John Means will become their Dallas Keuchel, but they don't have a Jose Altuve. And I know their farm system has, you know, improved a lot. We'll see if Adley Rutschman is, you know, their version of Carlos Correa or George Springer. You know, Grayson Rodriguez has become one of the top pitching prospects in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that's a lot of ifs. We don't know that, you know, and there's nobody on the major league roster right now other than maybe John Means, who looks like a long-term contributor.
I want to ask you about Corbin Burnes, who had another great start last night. He took a no-hitter in the sixth inning. He has not lost since May 25th. He's 6-0 in his last 13 starts. Where do you see him in the Cy Young conversation in the National League?
Yeah, I think he's right up there. You know, I guess Walker Buehler maybe is the number one right now.
Zach Buehler, yeah.
You know, it's a lot of guys. Burnes, he missed a little time right early in the year, so he doesn't have quite the innings. But, man, Buster, this guy, I don't know anybody who gets a hit off him throwing that 97-mile-an-hour cutter. You know, he has a slider, changeup, curveball. He's got the whole arsenal. He obviously throws strikes, never gives up home runs. He's a legit number one, you know, unless you want your number one to go 8 or 9 innings, which nobody does anymore. Yeah, just incredible. I do not want to face that team in the playoffs with those three starters. And who do you start your first game? Is Woodruff your ace or is Burnes your ace?
Wow. Boy, you know, I don't know exactly how Craig Counsell will sort it out, but I know that he'll make a great decision because I mean, he's as good as anybody in baseball that we've seen in handling a pitching staff. And, you know, the work that they've done to keep these guys rested, to give them, you know, a 6-man rotation, to keep that bullpen and relievers fresh. It's, I think that's benefited each of the individual pitchers.
You know, I remember years ago, the old ESPN analyst, Dave Campbell, telling me about Pedro Martinez. And he said the separator for Pedro was he had 3++ pitches. And he said that was different even from a Tom Seaver or a Steve Carlton or a Bob Gibson, who really were just fastball slider guys, had 2 pitches. Well, Corbin Burnes arguably has 4+ pitches with that cutter and the off-speed stuff. I mean, the elite pitchers today, and you can throw a Jacob DeGrom into that group with his arsenal, but Burnes, you know, 4+ pitches. Again, how do you get a hit off this guy?
And another day of ugly testimony in that case involving Trevor Bauer and the question of whether or not the restraining order against him will be continued. What are your thoughts about how this is playing out in Trevor Bauer?
Yeah, I mean, you hate to jump to conclusions. I think you might agree here. I can't believe he'll pitch again this season. And I don't know about the future. I don't know if any team is going to want to touch this guy. No, we got to let the, you know, rest of the case play out, get all the evidence. But I would not be shocked if his major league career is over. I just don't know if teams are going to want to touch him.
No, during this case, you know, the Dodgers internally have basically, you know, there'd been conversation among employees like, you know, stay away from this case. Don't comment on it publicly. Don't be out there, you know, talking about Trevor Bauer, talking about as a teammate, just get away from this case. And I think generally speaking, that's going to be the perspective of teams when it comes to players who are involved in domestic violence. And we'll see, you know, where this goes with Trevor specifically. But more and more, I'm seeing teams, I'm seeing players run from this type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Dodgers have a lot of financial commitment to him. You know, now maybe they, again, depending on how this case plays out, maybe they can get out of that. That might be the only reason. But if any team can afford to, you know, flush $100 million down the toilet, it's the Dodgers. So I don't think that long term even is going to be an issue for them. You know, maybe Bauer still gets his money. I don't know. But he's never going to be, I don't think he's going to be wearing a Dodgers uniform again.
All right, Dave. Thanks for doing this.
Yep.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, of course, Paul Ambichetti is a researcher at ESPN who is a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. We've learned otherwise. Hembo, look, we've got these really long losing streaks that have been in progress in the last couple of weeks. The Cubs finally break through. They end their losing streak. The Orioles have extended their losing streak to 13 games. And on the flip side, you get a team that's red hot, like the Yankees, a team that's winning games like the Giants. Do you believe in the idea of a momentum? And I ask you that question because, of course, you are a numbers guy, and a lot of stats analysts just don't believe in momentum. I personally do, having covered teams. What do you think?
I believe that momentum does exist and is a thing that if you ask players, they say does exist. So who am I as a stats person to say otherwise? I mean, I played baseball up through college, so my experience with the dynamic was such that it did feel like something on, you know, one way or another when I was playing baseball myself. But I think generally speaking, the teams that win the most games consecutively are the best ones, and the teams that lose the most games consecutively are the worst ones. Just like I think the idea of clutch is usually such that the best hitters are clutch and the worst hitters are not. So that's sort of how I see things. We obviously see flukes throughout a season, but there's no way that you can watch the Yankees play right now or watch the Orioles play right now and not conclude that momentum has something to do with it.
Yeah. And I also just haven't been around teams that, you know, made trades at the deadline and the teams that made trades, you could just feel the energy in the players. Mm. Like they were excited about that. And on the flip side, a team that didn't make trades, you know, the Red Sox this time, you know, in other years, other clubs where the team doesn't make trades, because I've heard the off the record grumbling and sometimes on the record grumbling from some of the players like, hey, what's going on? You can't tell me that doesn't have an impact on the players.
No question about it. I actually do believe that the trade, like, I don't really understand why so many front offices are hesitant to pull the trigger at the deadline. Like, you have two opportunities to really improve your club. You have the chance in the offseason. We all build towards that, obviously. And then you have 4 months of data that tell you what your team is. So in the, you know, in the case of the Red Sox and in the case of the Mets, I think those are the two most prominent examples. You and I knew that those teams were about to tail. So how did they not? How did their internal models not tell us that when all the public data said that? It's never, I've never quite understood that. And if the objective is to win and you're in a position to do so, I've never quite understood the notion of long-term planning and that vision, because winning in baseball is really hard, and you should respect every single season in which you have the chance to do it. I think right now the Mets and the Red Sox are really paying for their inaction.
And I tell you what, the Yankees, look, Hal Steinbrenner got a lot of criticism for not going over the $210 million mm-hmm. competitive balance threshold in the offseason. Brian Cashman has been criticized during the course of the year because of the construct of the lineup. It's very right-handed. But they essentially, you know, their attitude at the deadline was, you know what, we know we have long odds. We know that only one Yankee team has overcome a greater deficit than where we stand now, and that was in 1978. But we're going to go ahead because we're the Yankees, and we're going to go and make trades and figure out a way to get better because we're going to try. We're going to run out the ground ball. I feel like there's something to respect in that.
So do I. And I also believe in self-scouting, and teams don't do that nearly as well as they should. It's very easy when you're in the room to be biased towards your club. But if you're in that room and you built the Red Sox, what you should say is, we are in this position despite these flaws on our roster. Whereas the Yankees said, we built a really good roster. What we need to do is tip it over the edge. And that's exactly what they did too. So I'm with you there. I think self-scouting is something that in baseball right now, teams don't do a nearly good enough job doing. I think there's a lot of, I think there are a lot of teams that think they built a better team than they have. And I think they're, and obviously it works, you know, the same way in reverse. But again, I think the Red Sox and the Mets are playing like we all thought they might. Because the trade deadline this year was so massive. I mean, these GMs were throwing haymakers at each other, and you had to jump in the fray to feel like you had the chance, you know, you were giving yourself the same chance as they were. You owe it to your fan base. So I'm with you. Like, I think the learn here over the last 2.5 weeks is such that in future years, if you have the opportunity, you should do whatever you possibly can to win, because that is the sole objective. And if you just never know when you'll have that chance again. Baseball is such a fickle thing. It's such a fragile thing. And so you got to go for it. And the teams that went for it are the teams that right now are benefiting to a great degree.
Yeah. And the Yankees being one of those, as of this morning, they're 1 percentage point ahead of the Red Sox in a virtual tie. What do you got on Red Sox Yankees?
Well, I mean, the things that we've discussed, I think so far are important to know, but I think as it relates to the Yankees specifically, what they're doing now is sort of what we expected they might do all season. I mean, and they're hitting home runs. Luke Voigt, like, now he's talking about the opportunity to play more. He led the league in home runs last season. We've seen Gallo hit some tanks, Stanton hit some tanks, Judge hit some tanks. The Yankees have so much artillery, if you will, that all that really took for them was to have a couple good weeks for them to get back into this thing. And that's what they've done. And I Greeny is trying to convince me that they're going to pass the Rays. I don't see it. The Rays to me are still a better ball club. And a lot of these Yankees results are built upon sort of successful results in 1 and 2 run games. That's a really hard thing to sustain over 162, especially without Aroldis Chapman right now. And obviously Zach Britton has said on the record, he's not interested in closing. So I think they might have a tough time and might tail off in that respect, but I still see them as a wild card team. And I said it last week and I'll say it again. The Red Sox are going to finish fourth in the American League East, in part because their roster, I think, sort of overachieved in the first few months of the season. And in part because they didn't improve their club at the trade deadline. You've said it before, Chris Sale is going to have a massive impact on the last 6 weeks or so here. But even if he wins every fifth day, I'm still not sure this team is going to be able to stay in the thick of it, because I don't believe in the collection of the roster the way that I do in the Yankees. And the way that some of these young Yankees have performed this year, I think really is a testament to the organizational depth that Brian Cashman has built. The Yankees across the minor leagues actually own the second best organizational record. And you're seeing young players like Luis Gil come up and shove like and be very impactful players, even in small doses. That stuff matters over the course of a long season. The Red Sox don't quite have that either. So that's, I think, an underrated part of the Yankees season is the fact that they've been able to pull from the minor leagues in a way that they've not had to, that they've not been able to, I should say, in years past.
The San Francisco Giants just keep on winning. What do you got on the Giants?
So I would imagine after they hired Farhan Zaidi in 2018 to take over their program, he sat in a boardroom of a bunch of the people that he hired, and then he asked the question, what is the best way to win baseball given the way that the modern game is played? And the simplest answer to that question, Buster, is to out-homer your opponent because of how hard it is to string hits together. And that is what the Giants this season, that's what their success is built upon. But so the Giants have hit 62 more home runs this season than their opponent. That's plus 19.
That's crazy.
Differential of plus 19, better than anyone else.
That's crazy.
Last year, they were plus 12. And in Zaidi's first year, they were minus 70. This was the organizational priority. And the reason I think it was so astute is because when you play in that ballpark, you have to have guys with big, big, raw power. You can't if you're going to build a team to hit home runs, you can't afford to have Punch and Judy guys that are going to run into some the way that they might in other ballparks. He's built a team with big power and has built a pitching staff of guys that can keep the ball on the ground in some cases or benefit from a good outfield defense. That is what he has done. He's leaned into that. So we decide we're going to out-homer our opponent and we're going to win that way. They're like the prototypical 2021 team, because not only do you not see when you look up and down the roster, what it looks like to you is an average baseball team. But in baseball right now, if you can do that well, if you get a homer and you can limit your opponents doing so, you're going to win 2/3 of your games. And that's exactly what the Giants are doing. It's a remarkable story, but his team building, I think, has been shrewd. And in this particular sense, has been brilliant.
What do you got on Miguel Cabrera, future Hall of Famer?
I think Miguel Cabrera has gone from being someone who we all sort of agreed was a future first ballot Hall of Fame type to someone who's been wildly underrated. Now, obviously, the career arc he's taken is such that over the last 5 years, he's been about a league average hitter. He's been about a replacement level player, and he's obviously been paid a lot of money during that span and collected a lot of stats. But he's going to hit his 500th home run sometime later this week in all likelihood, Buster. I think this provides us an opportunity to take a step back and just acknowledge how great a freaking hitter this guy is. So what I looked up was, I went through all 27 members of the 500 home run club and just looked up how many batting titles they each won. The only players, Buster, to hit 500 home runs and win multiple batting titles are Jimmy Fox, he had two, Henry Aaron, who had two, Barry Bonds, who had two, and Ted Williams, who had six. Miguel Cabrera has won four batting titles and is sitting on 499 career home runs. It is not hyperbole, in my opinion, to say that he is among the most complete hitters of all time. I think it's also safe to ask the question whether or not another player like that will ever come around because of the specialization of today's hitters. There are some brilliant players across baseball, but I would be stunned if a player in my lifetime again hit 300 for his career and hit 500 career home runs. I'm not sure that's on the list of options anymore. So I guess in some sense, he might be the last of a dying breed.
Give me a team whose future you're betting on.
I'm betting on the future of the Detroit Tigers. And here's why. Wow. Number one, Buster, they're just way ahead of schedule. After going 8-19 in April, they've posted a winning record in May, June, July, and so far in August. In fact, they're only one of five teams that have posted a winning record in all four of those months. Pretty impressive. Secondly, they own the second youngest pitching staff in baseball, and it's definitely holding its own. Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal have both been above average from the perspective of run prevention. And Matt Manning, their top pitching prospect, has better stuff than both of them. He'll come along. And lastly, they've got a lot more help coming. That's a consensus top five farm system. Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green, their two top prospects, were just promoted to AAA this week. Those are both players that I really believe in and the scouts love. This is a club, Buster, that could make the playoffs next year. I thought that was going to be a long, extended rebuild for them. Obviously, the Cabrera money is somewhat inhibitive, but they've used that as sort of an excuse to really go into a full-on rebuild mode. They hit on a lot of their draft picks and player development types. I'm all in on the Tigers, and the fact that they have a winning record since the first month of the season is something that the average baseball fan probably does not know.
No, which is why I do think A.J. Hinch will – I don't think he's going to win American League Rookie Manager of the Year, but I think he's going to be in that conversation for sure
No question.
You're back after serving a suspension. And I'm just going to put a pinata in front of you because I was, been thinking so much about the Orioles as they go through this losing streak. Hembo, the run differential during the losing streak, unless I did my calculations wrong, minus 87. Which means that they're losing games by an average of almost 7 runs per game during a 13-game losing streak. Scale of 1 to 10, how embarrassing is this that a major league team is having this happen?
12. You did your math correctly. It is the worst run differential by any team in a 13-game span since the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. You tweeted last week that what is happening right now for the Orioles is really unprecedented in the history of the American League. And while you can sort of pick and choose different incident times in which teams have had sort of extended losing streaks like this, what they're doing to me is so troubling because it impacts the pennant race so much. So what will wind up happening here is whoever beats up best on the Orioles or most on the Orioles is going to have a leg up. And the fact that they're doing that against the quasi triple A team is something that I don't like at all for the competitive nature of baseball. We talked in the past about the idea of, essentially installing a spending floor of sorts, but either way, it's a terrible thing for the sport. And what the stretch that they're currently on, like as we speak, is legitimately unprecedented, at least in the modern era.
Yeah. And I get it. Like the Yankees are capable of doing more than the Orioles, but the Orioles are capable of doing more than they're doing. If you look at their payroll, with Chris Davis, if you discount him, because the Orioles have basically gotten most of that money back in insurance. Besides that, they're basically spending in 2021 the equivalent of what Garrett Cole is making. Okay, that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing for the sport.
They're the first team to lose 13 in a row by multiple runs since the 1911 Boston Rustlers. So when you're on a list with the Boston Rustlers and the Cleveland Spiders, you're having a pretty bad August.
Right, Hembo. I'll talk to you
later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. It's Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday.
Hold on, Taylor. I just want to say something. You were right at the top when you talked about the difficult transition to talk about the Bauer case and the details of the testimony that's going on with the woman giving her details on Monday and then being challenged by Bauer's lawyer on Tuesday. The whole thing is so ugly. But I feel like every day it's something that's important to talk about. And I'm sure that, Major League Baseball is probably going to, in the end, weigh all of this and deciding what to do because it's a private entity. And I think that, no matter what happens in the restraining order case that's going on here, I think Major League Baseball is going to hit him with a suspension because it does not like being dragged through this situation. And from their perspective, regardless of how he got here, it's clear that he was involved and he's going to pay a price for that.
Yeah, it's pretty tough reading the testimony. I said this to you a moment ago, but particularly jarring when to hear you, read it out loud on the podcast. When I see our guy, Alden Gonzalez on SportsCenter talking about it, it's just oof. It's rough, but it needs to be discussed. And, fortunately we can bring some levity to the baseball world by, beating up on the Orioles and such, but, gotta be mentioned. And I guess we will do another awkward transition, but we'll stay with the story for as long as it goes. Let's go to Matt Tremblay at MTremble1. Matt sent us a tweet from the Cubs that says Kyle Hendricks leads the majors with 14 wins. He asked, how is this possible? No 20-win pitcher this season. Hendricks winning 20 would be cool.
Yeah, I think it absolutely would be cool. And, credit to him for being able to, figure it out, to have that much success. And look, wins are not the best barometer of pitcher success, but to win 20 games for a team struggling as badly as the Cubs would say something about Hendricks. The best example one of the best examples, I think, was 1972, Steve Carlton won. You're not old enough to remember this, Taylor, but nope. He won 27 games for a 59-win Phillies team. Oof. They won 59 games. Steve Carlton won 27.
That is nuts. Oh, boy. Would have loved to see that. Let's go to PK Steinberg. PK writes in, at this point, should the Blue Jays, even with playoff hopes, shut down Springer to get him healthy for 2020? Oof, yikes. Tough break for George Springer.
It was a tough break. PK, it all depends on what the specifics of his knee injury are. You know, I'm sure that at some point, you know, they'll have that discussion as we get into mid-September. You know, they haven't, I haven't seen a hard timeline on what they're saying. I think they're kind of keeping the information close to their best, but you do hope that that they're in a position where he can play down the stretch.
Elizabeth Hart writes in at eHart Tweets, if Joey Votto continues at the pace he's on, is he in consideration for the NL MVP?
I think, Elizabeth, I think he would be among the, you know, the next best names. But as we've talked about in recent days, I think if Fernando Tatis Jr. continues to play and he continues to produce, even if he doesn't, the Padres don't make the playoffs, I think he's going to be the front runner.
Cody Simpson at Cody_the_blind. Cody writes in, Kershaw has been injured off and on for a few years now. Is he actually injured this year, or are the Dodgers limiting his innings pitched to save him for the postseason?
Cody, I think he's actually injured. And it'll be interesting to see how much he's going to be able to contribute the rest of the year.
JCM at StraightEdger88 writes in, do you know what happens to standard contracts when a player retires, like Davis during his contract, provided that there's no Bonilla or Serger or Chris Davis like deals that stretch for a decade plus after they retire? Do normal contracts become void?
Yeah, typically if a player does retire, make that decision, then the team is no longer required to pay him. You know, an example that would be Mark McGwire at a year left on his contract when he decided to retire. He just didn't like living with his own production, even though he was owed money. He walked away from that. In the case of Chris Davis, there was actually a settlement negotiated between the team and the player. I think of Rock Kubatko of Masson.com, my old friend. He was the first to report on that. But Chris Davis is getting paid.
Chris Davis will be paid $3.5 million annually from 2023 to 2032 and $1.4 yep. annually from 2033 to 2037. So there you go. That's a nice paycheck to be raking in every year. That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. I will be not here the next 2 days. I'm going to Austin, Texas for my my cousin, my brother's bachelor party. If anyone's got good Austin recommendations, bars to hang out at, let me know. I'll miss you, Buster.
I'll miss you too. But I got, before I go, I got to get, especially since you're getting bar recommendations, what's the over under for drinking while you're away and the number of drinks you're going to ingest?
This is a little bit trickier than last time, because I'm not going to be in Austin until like Thursday evening. So a little bit of a later start.
Are we going to count the drinks you ingest on the flight? I think we should.
I guess
on that travel.
Yeah. I mean, I have to get to the airport a little bit early. I might have a couple before I get on the plane, but I've got about 6 hours of travel. So maybe three there, maybe another, you know, six to eight or nine even on Thursday night. Oh, boy. Let's put it at like 37 and a half.
Oh, my God. All right. Yeah. Any listener, chime in whether or not you think Taylor's going to go over under on 37 and a half.
Close it up.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Hembo, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.